At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This episode is brought to you by 3Chi. 3Chi, it rhymes, is the industry leader in Delta 8 THC products. Delta 8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. Go to 3chi.com, the number 3chi.com, to shop for Delta 8 edibles like cookies and gummies, or to shop for vapes, tinctures, and oils that can be used to make your own homemade edibles. Use code GUNS21, G-U-N-S-21, at checkout and receive 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase.
Some years ago, a crack commando comedy unit were given jobs above their pay grade. These men promptly were put on leave and escaped to an underground podcast stockade in an unknown location. Today, still unwanted by big media, they survive as comics of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and you can find them, you can listen to Guns Blazing.
So I wake up with a big day planned out, Todd.
Big day.
Big day planned. I had to go to the dump. I had to get gas. I had to load up a bunch of shit to take to the dump. My girl's family bought a new house. So I'm over there. I'm my girl's dad's right-hand man right now. You know, I'm here helping out. Whatever you need, I do it.
Handyman.
Yeah, whatever you need, whatever has to happen. Whatever we got to do to take care of things. So I got to get gas first. The old Tundra. Still holding nice value, by the way. And I roll up to the gas station, the local neighborhood, lovely little Exxon, no free ads. And as I pull up, I hear a loud bang. So what's that noise, man? I look over and see New Jersey. You don't get to pump your own gas. The guy has to pump it. It's like right. A VIP thing. Well, it's not a VIP thing. And so you're fucking late, and this guy's over here playing tiddlywinks on number 10 when you're on pump 6. You know. So I said, I look over and I see the guy didn't take the fucking nozzle out. So the dude drove off, and you know he's got the thing, and the thing banged into his truck, the tip like a whip, you know.
Ooh.
And I had a shit, and I went, yikes. And I look over, and me and the other guy lock eyes, and I felt bad for the guy. You know, he had a work truck. He was probably on his way to some shit. He don't got time for the fucking incompetent gas station homie, which a lot of them are very awesome. But this guy's he's slipping a little. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, the gas station guys just start going at each other. That's the fifth time you've done these. You know, like the Indian guy is yelling at the black guy. Anyways, they're going back and forth, and I'm like, I forgot my wallet in my girl's car. So all I got is a C-note on me.
Uh-huh.
So I go, let me get 30 bucks. My man, regular, your boy's got to make some moves today. So I get my 10 gallons, and he gives me back my change, and I just throw it down in the console, and I dip. I got shit to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a right-hand man right now.
Can't be hanging around here all day at your gas station, Exxon.
Can't be fucked. Now listen, I got a little action in. I got to see some nice little something pop here, but that's, you know, that was what it was, and now it's not what it ain't, and I'm out. Anyways, I get over to the house and I'm fucking loading up these. You know, you can't be putting just paint cans. The people who sold the house were pieces of shit because they had a bunch of these paint cans. They threw them in a trash bag and the trash people won't pick it up. And these people put it on the street like it was going to be taken away, no problem. Anyhow,
lived there before. They knew what was going to happen. Those paint cans were going to sit there until the new owner decided to do something with them.
And guess what? It's not. It's kind of in the sticks. So there's not like it's not city trash. You got to call and get your own company on board. A Tony Soprano type shit, New Jersey, right?
Oh yeah, yep. There's some mobsters involved.
Yeah. So I get the car loaded up with all the stuff. All the back of my truck is loaded up with shit for the dump. I get out to the dump. It's $65 to go to the dump. You got to go on the scales first. They weigh your whole truck and everything. I'm the only, like, my truck is small compared to the trucks coming and going here.
Sure.
Big ass landfill, right? But then I get up there and it says $65 minimum. I'm like, okay. Well, I have $70. I had a hundo. I dropped $30 on gas. pull up, only got $30. The guy shorted me $40. So I had to turn around.
Damn it.
And I don't have my wallet. So I can't just be like, yeah, here you go. Let's just handle this. So I flip flop, hit back to the gas station. I'm getting a little bit heated on the ride. Like, this fucking guy just cost me an hour, you know, because he can't because he's not paying attention to his shit because he's over here fucking up and it's causing more fuck ups.
Right.
So I get in there and I'm like, listen, fellas, I'm not here to steal. No, I walk right in. I don't see the guy. And I'm like, listen, whoever the guy was, I would let the other guy drop dime right away. Drop a dime on it. The guy that was working earlier that didn't pull the pump out and the other guy drove off with the fucking nozzle, that guy shorted me $40. I gave him a C note. I got $30 in gas. I got $30 back, man. I don't even know how that worked out. It's skull. Like, how do you, I mean, even if you thought I gave you a 50, that's still too much change. Like, it doesn't make sense if I got 30 in gas.
Yeah. When the meter says $30 on the tank, that's not what you give back in change. That's what the dude just spent in gas.
So I go in there and I'm like, listen, man. And it took a lot for me to be cool because I was ready to snap. And I was like, listen, man, I'm not here to steal nobody's money. This ain't a scam. I'm not trying to run no games. I'm not here. This ain't a work. But I gave you $100 earlier. You gave me back 30. I didn't pay attention. I dropped the money in my console. I dipped. And anyways, he's like, he was pretty adamant that he did not fuck up.
Oh boy.
So there, I can see these little cards they put into the thing when they gas you up for cash, and it keeps track of all their transactions. So when they clock out, you know, oh, you owe $800 and, you know, and blind this many credit card receipts or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. They count their slow. He had $895 on him. So I'm sitting here waiting for these fucks to go through all this guy's money.
Ugh.
They take his card, blah, blah, blah. And ended up, he was $40 over.
Yeah, because he had your $40.
Yeah, my $40. So I went back to the dump, and then the fucking lady tells me I can't do wet paint there. And she was making fun of it. She was like, I guess because of the fucking ozone layer. She was dropping an F-bomb, so I kind of respected it. Because I could have lied. I think, I don't know, but you have to sign your name and all this shit. So I don't even know if I could have lied.
So where are you supposed to throw your paint away at?
Across the street, but they're not closed. They're closed on Mondays.
Oh, come on.
So I ate a fucking shit box cheese. I don't know what caused. There was a little food truck there, like a little food stand. It was like a trailer.
At the landfill?
By the landfill. And I was like, well, fuck it. This is what the other drivers are eating, bro. And let's just say it was a bad mistake and it was overpriced, $12 mistake, bro. And I want to apologize, first of all, to Jersey Mike. I want to apologize to everybody else that makes Philly cheesesteaks for I ordered that meat.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to do? You were having a bad day. Like, fuck, somebody put a food truck here for me. They want me to enjoy a delicious cheeseburger. Boom, you spend $12 to get it, and it's shit.
I'm a sucker for a cheesesteak, bro.
Oh, cheesesteak, not a cheeseburger. Cheesesteak.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for that. Mm. That's what I always need me a nice little cheesesteak, dude. And you know, lately I don't even eat the bun. I'll have a little bit of a couple of early bites of the bread, but then I just go to the meat and cheese and onions and peppers, you know?
It's so good. Such a good combo.
You know, but that gas station shit, you know, I mean, it's happened before. I've seen it happen. I've seen people driving down the street with the fucking things hanging out of their tanks.
Dude, this is no shit. It happened to me 3 times at the same fucking gas station. 3 times. And I would say a year and a half time span. I, while on duty as a state trooper, as state police detective, drove off with the fucking hose in my fucking car. And, you know, it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. The guy, Dan, that owned that gas station, I see him all the time. Like, it wasn't like I did it in Indianapolis. The person's never going to see me again. Oh, the fucking dumbass cop that drove off with the fucking thing.
This is our fucking cop. This is the guy fighting our crimes.
I see this guy at the Walmart. I see him at Applebee's. I see him at Kroger. Everywhere I go, there's Dan. I'm at the American Legion having beer. Hey, Dan. Hey, dumbass. Drove off with any hoses lately? 3 different times I did it at his gas station. I could never live it down with this dude.
No.
He must have thought I was the most incompetent fucking idiot that's ever worn a badge. And I don't blame him. 3 times I did this. I get distracted easily. I don't know. I was a young guy, fucking excited about what I was doing. Well, the first time somebody came up and asked me directions. So that threw me off. And then a call came over the radio, stranded motorist. I'm like, oh, I'm nearby. I'll take that one. And fucking get in my car from park to drive off, pop, kicking, 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 dragging a hose out to the street. 3 times. You know,
One of the craziest, the absolute craziest thing that ever happened to me at a gas station. Downtown LA at the Shell, which is the worst. It's like twice as expensive than any other gas station in LA, which is already high. Mm. I was with comedian Felipe Esparza, and I was in my 2001 Toyota Tacoma. This is probably in 07, 08. I'd say 08. We pull up to the gas station to get some fucking papers or something, you know? And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm pulled up into the parking spot, not at the gas pumps. All of a sudden, I see a bunch of people scurrying. I look over, the fucking gas pumps are on fire, bro. And people are just assuming this place is about to blow. And everybody, Felipe comes fucking running out, bro. I go jumping in. And it's like everybody's doing their best to not hit each other, but absolutely fucking like, get the fuck out of there, dude.
The gas station's gonna explode.
They got the fire put out. It didn't explode. But I was the scariest shit I had been in quite some time, because it was a nice set of flames popping off, dude. And I don't know what the fuck someone did, but there was absolute chaos at this gas station downtown LA, bro.
Oh,
off
my
of Figueroa.
God.
Figueroa, I forgot, like 27th or some shit.
And I've seen the videos of like static spark hits or something as they're putting the nozzle in their gas tank, and then it fucking lights, it starts spewing fire out of the thing because the gas is just now a torch.
Yeah.
I wonder if something like that happened.
Well, we got out. We almost got in three accidents, but we got out of there. And I'm glad we didn't, because I did not have insurance at the time. And my tags were definitely a few years off beat. And we fucking went all the way around the block, and we came back around the corner, and we stopped about a block up just to see if it was going to pop off or not. They got it taken care of, unfortunately. I mean, listen, I would have loved to see a gas station blown up, as long as no one got hurt.
Right. It would be pretty cool to watch.
You know, it would have crippled downtown, though, because that was like the only gas station except on the far other side. But yeah, that was a wild one to see. Just the chaos alone out front.
I've seen a woman smack a dude in the face with a hot dog at a gas station before.
With the bun or just actual meat?
With just the actual meat. So,
she fucking went above and beyond, dude.
Yeah.
You don't want to hit him with a padding.
They were into it. I mean, they were having a domestic for sure. And I'm sitting there waiting for a fight, not a hot dog, but the big sausage things.
Right? Yeah.
But I'm wanting one. I mean, I'm waiting for them to get theirs. And they're going back and forth, yada, 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 stuff about their kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. And they're salty necks. Look at them. You know, they got the little dirty dirt ring, you know, and the folds of the neck, you know, from sweat. And
the crack sweats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So they're going at it. And I'm like, all right, I'm just about ready to just, I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to get a sausage today. I can tell you that. I'm just going to fucking go up there, get me a can of chew. I'm going to bounce. So it was during a comedy trip. And so just as I'm about ready to just turn and walk to the counter, I hear, fuck you. And I'm like, ooh, that tone, like it was crisp. Mm-hmm. It was like, fuck you. And I was like, oh, shit, it's going to pop off. So I turn. And fucking that lady picks up a sausage out of there with their bare hands.
Oh, off the roller?
Off the roller.
That's a big dog move, right? That's a big move.
Bare hands. And she slaps him in the face with the sausage.
It had been at least a good foot-long dog to be able to hold on to it.
They were big, dude. It was those big, fat ones, man. And she just grabbed it and she, like, part sausage, part fist, you know, you can hear the fist meat clack right there on the jaw. Like,
so that means the hot dog most likely caught the neck area below the ear, which is a vulnerable area and also not a good place to smell like hot dog.
I mean, it was cool because as her fist connected, you know, she had swung it so fast that the sausage had a little bend going back. So it was just like, whack. Like the fist hit, and then the sausage came behind, slaps him right in the ear hole.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, the ear.
What a move. And I just stood there like, oh shit, what's going to go down?
Could have popped the eardrum. What a story you got to tell if your eardrum pops off a sausage slap.
He just fucking just hightails it out of the gas station, gets in the car and takes off and leaves her. And she runs out and she's screaming, you motherfucker, I got to get home, motherfucker. And it's like, oh, my God. So I'm just sitting there looking at the gas station guy, and I'm like, should I just go somewhere else? And he's like, I'm going to have to call the cops. And I'm like, okay, but hey, make her pay for that sausage. Don't let her get out of here without paying for that sausage, because I couldn't get one after she run her dirty mitts in there.
Yeah, yeah, after she fucking got all up in the roller.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. Give me $1.99, ho. And you know what? And to be fair, go get your free Big Gulp, bitch. Get your free Big Gulp. Man, Big Gulp. That's what we used to drink when I was younger. We used to go there and get a Big Gulp.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
A 44-ounce soda.
Oh, man. When you're a kid, ride your bike.
Oh.
Get there.
It's the whole mission of the bike ride is to go get Big Gulps. Mm.
Big Gulp.
Going to get Big Gulps, dude.
And baseball cards. And then you ride back with your Big Gulp. You stop at like the park or something. You get out on a picnic table and you start throwing out all your cards, see who you got. Man, the good old days.
Dude, I remember I had like a reunion of my child. When I was like 25, I was working at that bar Dos Gringos that I've talked about on 3,000 episodes. But I was always drunk. So after work, you know, and I was working six nights a week. So I didn't, and on my seventh night, I drank too. So I didn't want a car, and I lived so close. I mean, I lived around the corner. So I had a BMX bike. I fucking randomly bought, it had pegs on the front and back, dude. So I would relive my childhood on my midnight rides, middle of the night rides home from work all drunk.
Nice.
And I would go to the fucking park on the way home, and they had benches, and I would go work at my rail slides, my peg rail slides when I was 25.
Did anybody ever steal your bike?
I don't know. I feel like that bike probably did get stolen, dude. That one, I don't remember exactly what happened to it. I've told you a story about the time my bike got stolen, and I saw the guy, we surrounded him, and I got it back.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, one time downtown L.A., I had to sweep my buddy Pat Magoo, we called him. He was my roommate. He went to ASU. He's now a fucking beast-ass architect in Boston.
Mm.
But he worked at an Italian restaurant, and I sold weed. So he would bring Italian deli. So he'd always have fresh meats, and I always have fresh weed. And it worked out. And he was going to school so much, I just let him live in my house for free, because I had this, like, two-bedroom spot, and I had made all that money at the place, and I was paying the rent either way if you live there,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we moved out, he gave me this sweet-ass beach cruiser, bro. It was a fucking 80s Schwinn, classic black, white walls, you know, and black Schwinn. I love this bike. It had a lot of heart and soul to it, and I rode it everywhere, and it got stolen downtown LA. And so I was on a date one time, and after the bike got stolen, I'm at the pizza place below my fucking loft downtown LA, and I just met this person, and I'm standing in this first kind of date thing, whatever, and this motherfucker rolls up, bro, on my bike, but he had changed out one of the wheels, and he put mountain bike handlebars on it, but my sticker was still on it in one place down low on that bar below the where the seat is.
Oh yeah.
And I go, that's my fucking, but I'm like, I want to take my bike right now, but I'm like on this thing, you know, I'm on this date, whatever. Like, what am I going to do here? Just chicken to see me like strong arm a homeless dude for his bike, because it's actually my bike, right? So I go, bro, that's my bike, man. I need my bike back. He goes, dude, let me just take my parts off, man. I'll be right back. And I go, all right, man. I'll wait.
He put his own parts on it.
He goes, all right, man. He goes, I'll be right back. I'll bring it here. He didn't come back, bro. He didn't fucking come back. So now this whole time, this whole night, I'm just like, this shit's shot. I could have got my bike back, and I didn't. So about 2 weeks later, Felipe Esparza again, he calls me up. Fool! I found the fool on his bike, dog. He's over here in Chinatown. So my other homie, Edwin San Juan, is a comedian, my roommate at the time. We fucking jump in the car, bro, and we barrel over to Chinatown. We see him. We fucking follow him around about six blocks. We pull off. It was like a full-on cop mission, bro. Like, we're taking this guy down. We fucking, we pull off to the side, up on the sort of sidewalk, cut him off. I jump out and go, motherfucker, I'm still waiting for you to bring my bike back from 2 months ago at the pizza spot, bitch. Give me my bike, man. He said, come on, man. I go, fuck off. You know that's my bike, dude. He's like, all right, man. So he hopped off. We had him surrounded, bro. It was three of us. I just did the talking. Me, Edwin, if you don't know who these comedians are, they're very popular, very awesome comedians, Felipe Esparza and Edwin San Juan. And we fucking surrounded, bro. I got my bike back. It was the most glorious bike ride home, dude. It was like, see, it was probably 3 months after the pizza spot thing. It was probably 6 months after it got stolen.
Really?
And it was downtown LA from Chinatown, which, by the way, if you're ever down there, go to One Cock and get the fucking honey walnut shrimp. But anyways, we fucking, I had the happiest bike ride, bro, that I had ever had. It was like when that guy in Friday, when fucking, he got his bike back from Debo at the end of the night, when you see him driving off into the moonlight.
Uh-huh.
That's how I felt, Todd.
Victory.
And then it got stolen like 3 months later. And that time, see, when I got the bike back though, Todd, it wasn't the same.
No,
it rode different. It had a different fucking vibe on it. These mountain bike parts weren't, I wasn't feeling them.
It had homeless miles on it now.
It did. And they just didn't care. You could tell. I think this is what happens sometimes when people don't realize that sometimes you're not supposed to go back to an ex, you know?
Yeah.
You try to fucking rekindle the flame a year later and it just doesn't feel the same. Don't ride the right. You know what
somebody
I mean?
Else has been riding this thing for the last few months. I don't need my parts touching whoever's parts have been riding it before.
There's
me.
New parts on it. Don't feel right, dude. The handle's different. It rides wrong.
Yeah.
So you know what? When it got stolen the second time, I just kind of took a puff off of my one hitter, bro, a little sip of my drink.
And said, fuck it.
And I said, this one's for the streets, man. This one's for the streets. And it was for the streets, Todd. That bike had to go back to the streets. I wonder if I went downtown and I erroneously searched. Like if I went down there with a crew for a documentary to find my bike from 08.
Yeah.
Could we find it?
I bet you could.
I bet it's still down there in the streets. Listen, a lot of those homeless people, they don't ever go anywhere, bro. And now there's no one ever to fucking surround the guy because right. I'm gone.
I guarantee you that's right there in that four block area still. Some homeless dudes just fucking riding it to death.
Right into Chinatown, bro. By the way, what a great place to eat in that area. Now, this is how I learned that you guys, that cops know where to eat. Cops are always a signal of a great place, a great restaurant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because
a bunch
one
of cop
cock,
cars there.
Always there cops at one cock, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was always at least two deputies in that bitch somewhere.
Yeah,
at the old one cock in downtown LA Chinatown. You know, that's how I found out about my favorite diner down there, which is Uncle John's, which gets the spicy pork chops. You know, and then they have the roll talk. This is the only place that I know of that has a focus. And I mean, a world class next level focus on the rolled taco.
Mm.
And this is on, it's called Olivera Street, downtown LA, across the street from their Penn Station. I forgot what it's fucking called. It's called something station. You know, the buses and trains all go there. But if you guys are downtown LA, or if you're in LA anywhere and you find yourself downtown, go to Olivera Street. There's two or three different little roll taco spots. There's one in the corner you can't miss. It's the most popular. But there's one a few shops in. You know, it's like a swap meet. It's not that long or that big. You know, there's only probably like 30 or 40 vendors, but it's real nice. And they got the three roll taco spots, bro. And they're fucking incredible, man.
How do you think they got the name One Cock?
The Chinese spot?
Yeah.
Well, maybe those two cocks, and then they got in the fight as owners, and then they had a fight to the death, and then
they
became
split.
The owner.
Just one cock now.
Just one cock now, bro.
It's one cock.
What about a fucking Chinese-Mexican spot called a Dos Cocks?
Oh, that would have been the next move.
The Uno Cock. Mm. Which, by the way, again, Mexicans. In San Luis, you know, Mexico, just south of Yuma, you know, on that California-Mexico border down there in Arizona, in that corner. Again, the people used to go to Mexico para comida de China. And you people, on a Sunday, it was a big deal. You go down to Mexico and eat the because Mexicans make amazing Chinese food, bro.
Hmm.
And everybody goes down for comida de China. And you fucking go down there and eat the Chinese food in Mexico.
Wow.
That's how good it was.
And that's comida de China. That's the
comida.
That's food from China.
The Chinese food.
Food of China.
Yeah. They always do it that way, which is like, it's kind of like they're talking like what people used to. This is food of China, right?
Yeah.
That's how the language translates Spanish. It's always the blank of the, you know, it's always kind of reversed.
Formal. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
this is the food of China.
You know what else we used to go down there for on Sundays? Just sometimes?
What's that?
Just shrimp cocktails, bro. They had the best shrimp cocktail. It came in this big ass mug, glass mug. And it was just unbelievable. It was so good with the hot sauce and the crackers and the lemon and the lime, fat ass shrimp. Man, I mean, that's what you go down there for. You would just go down in the morning. My boy Randy would drive us in his sweet ass Honda Accord. He had a 1998 Honda Accord sitting on 718s. Fucking clean ass whip. Couple of 10s in the back, bumping DJ Quick. You know what I mean?
I haven't had shrimp cocktail in a long time. I don't know why I don't eat it more often. I love it. I love it.
I feel like the Mexicans, though, it's a different level of shrimp cocktail.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
You know, closer to the sea. Like the ceviche, you know, the shrimp cocktail, the way they serve it, jalapeno, mm-hmm. and it's like a pico with the tomato juice. You know, it's just on another level, man, with the crackers. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
I want to take you on a run. We should go to L.A. at some point. We can obviously do some other podcasts. We can do some shows. But then we could just go like on an L.A. food tour, because when I was there, I was just never home. You know, after the first 2 years, I'd say, it took me a couple of years to get on my feet, get it moving over there. But there's just so many amazing food spots all over the entire place that I can go from, you know, from the Comedy Store on down to fucking Long Beach down, you know, and keep on going. Long Beach, another great place. There's just so many good spots that I want to take you to.
I'm all about it. I'm all about going on food vacations.
We could go on a full-on food vacation between Phoenix, San Diego to L.A., and then mm-hmm. we can go through Yuma, and I can take you to that place, the Chili Pepper. And that way, you know, I can just show you the food that has shaped my life.
I'm all about
it. Just how good it is.
Mexican food, and I can drink some Modelo. I can get down on some margaritas. I mean, that's my life, really. That's my go-to.
Yeah.
If I have a favorite, you know, it's Mexican food and the margarita. I can't get enough margaritas. I'd drink them every day if I could get by with it.
Did you see my story post on $20 Chef 2 nights ago? Me and my lady went to this restaurant, La Sierra, here in Bradley in Belmar Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the picture that I posted
Mm-mm.
to my story?
No.
This is probably, I'm not sure you're even ready for this. I'm going to show you on camera here.
It's like and professional talk quality. About,
now, normally this dish / cocktail / appetizer
mm-hmm.
comes with oysters and shrimp, but I cancel the oysters for extra shrimp. But look at this, bro.
Ooh, look at that.
Now, let me break down what you're looking at here, Todd. That's a leaked, I think that's a, whatever, 32-ounce or a 20-something-ounce margarita, frozen margi.
Mm-hmm.
That's on a plate with shrimp. Now, there's probably, I think, 10 deliciously, wonderfully flavored barbecue shrimp on this. Mm. Also hanging off the edge of the margi. And if that's not enough, they put the little thingy that clips onto the rim of the margi so they could put a beer upside down in the margi.
Mm.
So for $20, which, by the way, unbelievable price for this, we're talking for a fucking 30-ounce margarita, a coronita, and 10 barbecue shrimp.
Come on.
That are delicious. Like, no one, they couldn't get the fuck, they couldn't have
enough. They're losing money. They're losing money at that place.
And you know what? They probably, if you're smart, or you know, you want to mark up like 8 other items a dollar or, you know, or 10 items a dollar. So the makeup for that one item that should cost 30, that's only 20, right? Like, I'm assuming, I've never owned a restaurant, but I'm assuming, you know, if you want to cover cost of something, you just cover the cost hidden in other costs. So people think they're getting the hookup, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I am telling you, people at the table, everybody around me, blown away. 4 people came up to ask me to take a picture with me and a fucking drink. Not really, but I'm telling you. And then look at the Palomas. They serve them in clay mugs.
Oh, what a move.
This place has it down, bro. They have it fucking down pat. They just get it. Oh, no. Where's my clay mug?
You lost the clay mug photo?
Did I lose the fucking clay mug photo, bro?
Jesus.
That's Jesus. Insane. No way I lost a... Oh, here it is. Never mind. False alarm.
We got it.
Right, we got the clay mug. Look at the fucking clay mug, bro, for the Paloma, for my lady, bro.
Love it.
Look at that, man. I mean, that's what you call a cocktail, bro.
I love it. What a move.
A nice clay mug. They got the cherry, the orange, the lime, the lemon, and the chili salt rim, bro. Mm. Eat a bowl of shit if you ain't down with the chili salt rim. If you ain't down with the chili salt rim, can you please do us all a favor? Go ahead and turn off this episode. Take off your headset. Turn on, change the channel, and get off our feed.
Get off the feed.
Off the feed. OTF.
Chili salt is life.
GOTF. Get off the feed, bro.
I'm going to be in St. Louis this weekend.
Yes, sir. This weekend,
Friday
coming up.
Friday and Saturday, Helium Comedy Club for anybody out that way. Last time I was there, we had quite a good time after the shows. That staff, I love the staff there. They like to party a little bit. Yeah. Little lost thing from the comedy clubs. Now all the staff don't like to party like they used to.
No, there's no more Mortys out there.
Everybody's scared now. I get it. Comics are scared. Oh, I don't want somebody to think I was hitting on somebody. I don't want to get canceled. Da, 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 da. And the staff's like, you know, whatever. I don't want to get fired for hanging out. Whatever the policy is there. But at this club, great fucking people. Great hang after the shows. So I can't wait.
Yeah, that level of action is just gone now. The Morty's fun. I remember when Bowers was talking to me about how he books that room when you guys own Morty's. He goes, it was complete opposite of everybody else, and I couldn't have been happier. He was like, listen, if you're one of those comics that you say you're going to go right after the show in your room, you're full of dog shit, and you're not fun. I don't want you in my room.
Yeah.
He goes, if you don't want to come out and have some drinks with us and enjoy your life, then what am I booking you for? I don't need to book fucking geeks that don't want to hang.
I know. And he had a point. He's like, hey, my club, there's way more comedians that want to work here than I have spots for. So I'm going to book the ones that are fun after the show. Good comedians, obviously, but then also a good ass hang after the show. Man, that's how he did it. And if you came and you were very funny, crowds loved you, whatever, but you were out after the show, you probably weren't getting booked back. Unless you were a box office monster, obviously.
Yeah, you had no choice. But the guys who didn't have that, like the middle acts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what else that I didn't like, but I respected, was that the favoritism, the most you were getting was a couple of weeks a year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was no favor. Like, your favoritism was that it was two times every year or one time every year, like clockwork.
Right.
So you always got your one or two. But there was nothing else like... You know, and especially the way you guys made comedians feel like we were such great buddies, which we ended up being, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we actually were buddies. We were good buddies, but there still was like that level of fairness.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, like, because I know how I am. If I was in your guys' position, I would probably book the same fucking 30 guys, four times a year or whatever.
Right, right.
Especially the middle acts, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because I just, you know, you just want to hook your homies up.
There were some you wanted to, like we would bring you what?
Usually twice, once or twice, depending on what I was up to or how lazy or how on top of the emailing I was.
Yeah, and then sometimes headline or, hey, so-and-so's going to be here. Do you want to come open for them? Because it was routing for you because you were going somewhere else for the week. You know, like shit like that was so much fucking fun to be. Because then you were like, oh, then we're bringing our friend in to party for the weekend, you know? And that's how it felt. Like whenever you couldn't wait, you would see some guys or girls only once a year. Wow. But you knew, man, okay, Jen Murphy's coming. She's always a fucking blast to hang out with afterward. It's going to be a great weekend, you know.
Super funny.
Chad Daniels, whoever, was, you know, just people I'm thinking of that were just awesome hangs afterward. Bert Kreischer was always, he was an awesome hang.
You know what I really, one of my favorite people I met there was Kirk Fox, which by the way, he's on that show, right now, it's on Hulu.
It's Reservation called Dogs.
Yeah, Res Dogs.
Watch it.
Fucking awesome.
Oh my God, it's such a good show.
He is so, I just love Kurt Fox is the best, bro.
He's so funny.
He's just great, man. He's just a great guy.
And like how he is in that show is how he is in real life. Like they just let him be him, man. It's like laid best back, part. Like smart ass attitude. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, man. Like the way he says shit to you, it's like, it's so smooth, but sometimes can be so condescending. But you're fucking, it was smooth. And he almost comes off nice in a fucked up way.
What happens now is you stand up out of your chair, you turn around, and you walk away.
He's just fucking great, dude. Today was the harvest moon this evening right now, Todd, as we speak. I don't know if you know that, but I did tweet that out just so everybody else knows.
Werewolf activity with the harvest moon. The blood moon, is it also called the blood moon? Is that the same thing?
Well, I don't believe so.
Two different things.
But I will say this, is that it's a great night to grab some beers or a bottle of alcohol. Get out there and get hammered in honor of the Northern Hemisphere's autumn equinox. And that's what we're looking at here. The harvest moon is the last full moon before the harvest equinox. And that's just facts that I have off the top of my skull, and I'm not reading that off. You know what I mean? The autumn equinox, if you don't know what the autumn equinox is, then you're a fucking idiot, guys. Okay, and I'm just smarter than you.
It's the last full moon of summer.
If you're wondering what the fucking spiritual meaning of the autumn equinox is, the autumn equinox represents a lot in the world of woo. Okay, it is the equilibrium of day and night, and this represents the light and darkness in our lives, guys. The long summer nights have passed, and we are now in a season of transition. I mean, and I mean, I could go on, but guess what? I'm not. We only have a certain amount of minutes on this fucking thing, dude. I can't just ramble on about my in-depth knowledge of the autumn, you know, equinox.
I wonder if there's, you know, it's typically more murders during a full moon for some reason, whether, you know, some people say that some people have like a, some kind of mental connection to a full moon.
Yeah.
They go a little crazy, which is probably where the whole werewolf thing came from. But I wonder if the harvest moon is different in that way. Like if that makes you like, you want to save shit, put stock up on extra supplies and stuff, like harvest, like go out and harvest.
Yeah. Well, also, I believe the reason it's called harvest moon is because this is like some of the last full days where if you're a farmer, you can work well into the night because you have that extra light in order to have a better fall harvest.
Get that harvest in.
Yeah. And if it's you really want to know the meaning of our, of the autumn solstice, again, this is just more knowledge off the top of my head. The autumn solstice. And Todd, you know me. I'm a huge autumn solstice guy.
Huge autumn solstice guy.
I'm wearing a fucking undershirt right now, and it says autumn solstice on it.
It does.
And if you don't know, if you're one of the dummies out there that doesn't know what the autumn solstice is, that's the time in which the sun crosses the plane of the equator away from the relevant hemisphere, making day and night of equal length, okay? And that happens around September 23rd in the northern hemisphere, you dumb fucks.
So that's the day, the day and night are exactly the same length.
Day and yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, Todd. No more fucking
even 12 hours each.
Even flat.
Let's go.
Which is why, you know, that you know that's what they do. That's originally why they did the whole time change bullshit, which I love the internet's trying to make that happen. Like out of nowhere, we're just gonna bully the earth into fucking isn't that wild that the or internet's gonna bull it's gonna happen. They're gonna get rid of the fucking time change. They're going to, the internet is going to officially bully a time change, the global time change of our clocks in the United States. They're going to bully it. How hardcore is that to bully time change?
It is. Well, Indiana used to not change times. Most of the state.
Arizona doesn't change.
And people bullied us about it. And then we, next thing you know, well, we're on Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time. But it used to, we didn't change. It fucked people up. So Steve Hofstadter used to joke that it kept us safe from terrorism because nobody could synchronize their watches to set an attack. But it's fucked up. That's why I'm still fucked up with time zones. They make no sense to me because I grew up without them. I'm like, no, my time's always the same. But
yeah, that's how it was in Arizona as well. It didn't change times there.
I'm so glad that we're always on the same time as New York. For our sake, because I would be all fucked up all the time. I'm always fucked it up. I have to check 20 times when I'm going on a comedy trip to somewhere in a different time zone to make sure I'm not fucking up the time.
Is it
an hour earlier? Is it an hour later?
And you know, for some reason, I don't know if it's my brain telling everything and everybody to fuck right off, but I just like knowing Pacific Central and all that. I mean, I know Eastern, I know Pacific's West Coast, I know, you know, Central. Mountain and Central can eat a bowl of shit. Like, no offense, but I don't know which is which.
I don't either.
And I barely know Pacific. And the only reason I know East Coast because it's fucking in the word.
Pacific's tough to deal with. 3 hours difference with us. It fucks me up.
Yeah.
Fucks up.
The only thing I love about it is when there's some shit going on and my time frame to getting it done is being held on the Pacific time frame. So that if I'm like, it has to be done. Like you have to do these ad reads or this ad or this or that by 6 p.m. I'm like, I got till 9 because it's only fucking, I'm on the East Coast because I'm smart.
Reservation Dogs.
So good so far.
So glad that I found that show. Cause
I'll tell you what, I feel like they're letting comedians write. Like they're getting legit.
They must be because, man, it's the writing is so good. The show is so funny.
And there's so many good writers, right, that are comedians, but you don't. But I mean like those like next, like the Kurt Foxes of the world. Like you're giving them, you know, guys who are like for Kurt Fox post funniest shit I've ever heard in my, like every day is just something wild on his page with his perspective that is unique to his perspective almost, right?
Yes.
I feel like, and there's like what, three groups of writers when it comes to comedians. You got the guys that are way more better writers than performers. Mm-hmm. Then you got the middle guys who are great writers, great performers. Then you got the guys that are way more performer than writer and don't even have like, they have ADD, so they can't even sit down and write enough shit to organize to submit, you know?
Right, right, right.
So I feel like when you get guys like a Seth Rogen's, right, who are great, who are comedians, but they're great writers and they're very organized with it.
Mm-hmm.
They can fill out, they can write the whole script. They can write the bits. They can write all this shit out and get it written properly and submitted, you know what I mean? And hit deadlines. And that's what I feel like Res Dogs is. It's like the guys that are really good at comedy, the Kurt Foxes of the world, and they're also really good during the day writing for a sitcom, bro.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's happening. And they're giving them, because normally you get fucked, you know, they always come in there and check you, or they do this or do that, or they don't give that level of action to a comedic artist. And it's either the guys that are that only say they're writers. But then there's those guys, like if you just put a group of fucking hilarious comedians in a room and let them write scenes, that's what Res Dogs is.
Here's I'm looking at his, because he has the best memes, because his jokes are short.
Yeah.
And they're so witty. So it's perfect for him, because on Twitter, he'll just, if you guys follow him, it's at Kirk, K-I-R-K, Fox, F-O-X. So it's just a picture of him on stage, and then he'll have one of his one-liner jokes on there, and like here's one that says what doesn't kill us has a friend that will.
just the weirdest shit that's always makes sense, dude.
I love it. Look at some other. My last girlfriend was 5'2". Unfortunately, there's no height requirement for an emotional roller coaster.
Bro, I was looking at Twitter earlier, and somebody at the I don't know which game it was, it looks like LSU, but the cameraman walked off like from the network.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the network, the cameraman walked off from his fucking $100,000 camera, and like some kid from the section just jumped up, put the headset on, and just started fucking cameramanning.
Really?
And it's hilarious, bro. He just starts fucking running the cam. Oh my God, dude! How can you ever let? That's so dumb. I don't know what to think about that, but I was thinking about it. I'm sipping on a little, dude. I got a lot of bags in today, bro. I still nice. Like listen. Early before I left, I had to, you know, this morning we were gonna do the Patreon, so I knew I couldn't leave the house till 11. You know, my lady's up early; she's on her way to work. I'm already up and at 'em. I'm over here violating house rules by getting out there throwing bags before 8. But I knew I only had till 10. Yeah. So I had to get a couple hours in early.
Okay.
And then I got some more bags in. Yeah, I got, after we got all the fiasco with the gas station and the dump and then this and then that, I got home with plenty of light because it's only the harvest moon. So we're still here in this and this other solstice. So I got my bags out. Fucking got another couple hours in, bro. I was feeling nice with it too by the end, bro. I was like, not only was I doing exactly the same motions in this bag and 10 out of 12. I felt it. It felt right, Todd. Also, I got you some bags coming.
Nice. Yeah, I threw some drunk bags last night.
How'd it go?
I was real drunk and it was not good.
No.
So everybody, you know, heard that I'd gotten pretty good at cornhole. They didn't see it. I'd be like literally missing the board, but I would hole out 2 out of 4, you know, but
good quality.
But then I would miss the fucking board by 3 feet in between. So somehow yeah. I was on autopilot at certain times and that would just fade out.
Yeah.
Like it was bad. I could barely stand though, I'm sure.
I'll tell you what, the guys that, now listen, now cornhole pros, there's several levels, right? There's There's some guys who play just kind of to drink, you know, but they ended up being really fucking good.
Yeah.
There's some people that casually drink. There's some people that go absolute bonkers where they don't even know your name, their own name by the time the night's up. And then there's the casual guys, you know, that, but there's some guys that are just keeping under the radar. They drink their shit, but they just hammer bags, dude, and they're good.
There's the ones that can cruise at like a 0.05
yeah.
BAC the whole fucking weekend. The
whole weekend. From fucking 8 a.m. to close, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like 0.0508 just go. I'd say 0.1. You know, I'd say
there's definitely those
driving, but again, a lot of times you could be a 0.10 and not be that hammered, but unfortunately they don't consider your tolerance.
You're feeling
when
good.
You're in the legal system,
but you're throwing bags, you're not driving, so who cares?
Yeah, exactly. And those, you know, there's a lot of them, but there's people that don't drink at all.
Yeah,
you know, it is a really interesting dynamic that I really do enjoy that with the ACL, and I mean just pro Cornell is people's patterns and what they do, you know, because it's relatable to comedy. You know, if you get too much in the rhythm of too much of that, now it's a little bit more, it's a little different because you're getting paid by a certain, you know, it's, there's obviously a more, I'd say a higher level of, you need to, you know, sustain your soberness more than anything
mm-hmm.
in comedy versus Cornell.
Yep.
But there is that dynamic of who does what, how much they drink. Cause it's, you know, and you know, people aren't, no one's throwing. I mean, occasionally someone's stupid, but
that happened to me. My show in Carmel, Indiana, at Feinstein's Cabaret.
Have you talked to them again, by the way? Have you started any business deals?
No, I need to get a hold of them though, to get these other comics booked in there. But I met my buddy before the show and drank just a little too much. And I hadn't realized like I hadn't eaten all day. I just got in a rush to get my shit done and get there early enough to hang out with him for a couple hours before the show.
Yeah.
So I did, and we just drank too much, too fast. And I knew
Bobby
it
didn't right before eat. The Bobby show. Didn't get a cheeseburger in
no,
you.
No, and I tried to get some food, but there wasn't time. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm in a bad spot, man. I'm too drunk. Like, I can feel it. And so I had to tell people on stage beforehand what happened, because I'm like, hey, I'm going to fuck up. Like I've drank too much. I can tell. So
yeah,
you know, I'm just gonna let you know up front. And I did. Like you ever tell a part of a joke that requires the previous setup in order for it to make any sense.
Yes.
But you say the line and you're like, oh shit, I didn't tell that part. This isn't making any sense right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh fucking.
You were definitely twice. You were past the limit, kid.
Yeah, I did that twice in my set.
Yeah, that's another level of what you were there. That's the level of you've lost whether your place in your set.
Yeah.
And just, then when that happens, it's all bets are off.
And it was a bit like I hadn't told in a long time, so I even made it worse. I was like, oh, why did I even start into this bit?
You know, I haven't done that often. I'm pretty good at being in robot mode. I don't deviate off. Once I'm gone off the set's gone. You know, I'll come back. I'll whip back around for a couple of closers, you know,
mm-hmm.
but like the intricacy, the smaller bits and that whatnot, that just, you know, it just goes up at a certain level of crowd work. I mean, if it's going really well, I can't even go into the fucking, like the set's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you know what? If I try to fucking pretend to these people, they're going to know I'm a sham.
That's the danger of crowd work. It's like if you hit fucking and it's electric, they're like, we don't want any fucking jokes. Just keep talking to people.
Yeah. Keep fucking with people. Doing your thing. You know, I did that one show and I a lot of people don't realize it. It was kind of a nice little education for some of our patroners, our Patreon or people that to watch, you know, like the levels of stand up, like what it really is. Like people think that you're just up there having a good time talking for an hour. Like, bitch, I have to build the set. And then if all you have is that robot set, you know, people don't even get it almost. They're like, he just fucking did all that. Like,
right.
People actually think that motherfuckers are out here doing a different hour every night. Get the fuck out of here, guys. But again, it's not, no one goes to a comedy show twice in, you know, one weekend. Like, what's
no,
they might. And if you know what, some people they do because they have guys, I've had people come back.
Uh huh.
But I'll tell them, I always give them the warning. Hey, bro, you better laugh at the same. You better pretend like you never heard this shit.
Right.
And that's one of my go-to lines to say. is, bro, you better pretend like you never heard this shit. Whether, and that just kind of gives me like a scapegoat on it, I feel like.
It always stresses me out when somebody does that. Hey, we're going to stay for the next show too. Or like, fuck, man, you just fucking like, put pressure on me to do different shit. All right.
Yeah, don't put pressure on me, bro. But if I only did, it depends on how much crowd work I did the first show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I did 65% and I don't mind, then I'm like, okay, yeah, go ahead.
Right.
You know, you're gonna hear some things, but you'll hear other things that you didn't hear because I didn't even come close to getting to them.
Yeah.
But I have to start getting more disciplined with my time. One of the shows I did like 1:10 last time I headlined a weekend. I'm over here like, and it was fucking, I didn't want to get off. It was just too good. It was just too funny. And everybody was too awesome. And every little thing was working. And I'm, you know, I just don't want to get off sometimes. And then I had to look down. I'm like, holy Christ, bro, get off, dude.
Because the servers are like having a nightmare.
Yeah, the servers are like, can this fucking Momo shut up so we can close out and go live our real life? Because you get confused, right? Because you're like, why would you want to hang out? Like, where the fuck, you know, this is everybody here is partying.
Right.
You know, all the crowd or whatever. And then you're like, oh, yeah, it's because they don't give a fuck. It's a job, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. But you know, it's easy to get confused, I guess. But I never really, it's not like I'm sitting around thinking that. But in general, you just, you know, when I worked at a comedy club, if Carlos Mencia or Mark Curry are there, motherfuckers were like trying to get their shift picked up because they knew that Mark Curry, Mr. Cooper, hanging with Mr. Coop, and Carlos Mencia, and this is in 2001, we're gonna do at least 2 hours at Mencia, no problem. Do 3 hours. Mark Curry, 3 hours, bro. And I mean, we're talking about every table bust, not a glass or a dish in the room.
Ugh.
Every dish cleaned. Everybody's sitting around in the back just waiting. And then you have your checks out there. Everybody's paid for the most part, except for whoever hasn't. And you got to wait for those fuckos. You're just waiting so you can hurry up, put the chairs away, and get on the fuck to the to
people
shooters.
In the crowd are like, I'm going to have to pay overtime to my babysitter.
Yeah. And there was always those two, Mark Curry and Carlos Mencia, dude.
Ralphie May, too. Quite a reputation for doing 3-hour sets.
Well, you know who else? Gabriel Iglesias, but it's a theater show. So
yeah,
it don't matter. It's like he come to his theater show. He might do 3 hours.
Yeah, you're not turning over a room.
And you know what? And people stay. And you know what else they do? They stay for the meet and greet. And if the meet and greet's 5 hours, okay.
Wow.
Because the Dallas meet and greet early on in the early tour, when I first started in his early 2010, there was 5,000 people in that arena. He did every single motherfucker.
That's what it takes.
After the show, I mean, people were getting out of there at 2 a.m, bro.
Damn.
And we ran a tight ship. You know what I mean? We had the camera guy with the fuck. We played good cop, bad cop. You know, it's like the camera guy is the bad cop. And it sucks because you're as a comedian. You don't want to be the bad guy.
Right.
Because you want people to like your shit.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, who gives a fuck, bro? Even the people that love my shit don't remember me now. They probably wouldn't remember if I told them to hurry the fuck up. Fluffy's got to take a picture with 3,000 more people. Because the meet and greet was longer than the show sometimes.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, when that many people love you, that's incredible. What a feeling.
And they stay, bro. Like, people right now, like, think about that on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, Sunday night or a Saturday. They get there. It's a 7 o'clock show. They get there at 6. The show starts at, you know, the show starts at 7.
Mm-hmm.
You got 45 to an hour of the openers. That's 8. Gabriel comes out, does 2, maybe 3, 9, 10, 11. And then you got 2,000-plus people in line to take a picture.
Damn. I want to get back involved in the Indianapolis comedy scene. I'm getting the urge to start hitting the mics, actually work on a set again.
Okay. Because you weren't feeling good. You weren't liking comedy too much here for a little while.
Yeah. It's, you know, I want to see if I can fall back in love with it. So the only way to do that, I figure, is to get back into the scene, get in there with the young kids, the pups that are hungry, you know,
out there trying
to work. And because I just haven't been involved in the scene at all. So I'm not around it. And I'm thinking that will reinvigorate me. But then again, I'm sitting here reading, you know, shit that's going on on social media between all the local comics here, and you got these fucking wars always going on back and forth, like people.
But that's always a given. I mean, like, that's going back till I remember that till for the first week of comedy. And you know, I think the matter of you just getting in there and just getting the room time, like fuck all those dummies, all the dummy stuff. You know, it's like you're there to, you know, you got to record your set. You know, you're gonna think about, you know.
Get to work on
that
shit.
That nervous feeling when you're in the back, while you're looking over your notes, mm-hmm. you know, forcing yourself no matter what to not crutch it and go on with what works, you know, but just not giving a fuck, man. Yeah. That's what it is, really. Just the real important part of going back out and getting back in into the, you know, any room you can get into. It's just about not reiterate to yourself that it doesn't fucking matter. I'm here to tell these jokes, bro. It might work. It might not work. None of this shit matters because I'm not going to remember none of these shows in 2 years anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on material and you got nothing to prove. I mean, people know you're funny. You headline clubs. Like this is just as it actually looks more respectable because you're down to not do well to make sure you do better when it counts.
Like BT's always, he's always hitting the mics. He's always working. I mean, that's his gym. He's always in there and he's mixing it up with the young people. And I respect it. I think I need to do that and see, because what I've fallen out of love with is the business of comedy, because they will fucking, they love you when you're selling, when you're a big ticket seller, boy, they love you.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you fall back in line with like an average comedian and you're not selling 800 or 1,000 tickets a weekend and you're selling like 200-300, it puts you in that whole different category, and all of a sudden it's not, hey Todd, what's going on, you know, we need to get you. They just fucking forget, and that part I'm like, oh fuck you guys,
which,
you
know? Sucks. Yeah, I like that. You're right. And you know what, if you coordinate with BT, you'll be doing nice, because that's the kind of energy you need right there, is you and BT energy, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you guys know BT, we've had him on, but he's just the fucking best, man.
He's just the perfect human being. Like, he always makes you feel good. He's always in a good mood. So
what a way
to
put BT. He's the perfect human being.
Right?
That's the exact perfect way to explain that guy.
He's so enthusiastic about everything. He's like a little kid. Like, he loves stand-up. He's never, ever, ever lost his enthusiasm for fucking getting up and telling jokes.
No, and you know,
and he's been through it. I mean, he's a big guy. You know, he was a big dude in the industry at one point.
Yeah,
a movie, and then, you know, moved to LA, got the fucking agency behind him, all that shit, and then it just didn't go. But he has never lost his enthusiasm.
He has not. And you know, and I love what I love about people like BT is that it just like almost instantly forces you to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm a fucking piece of shit, man.
Yeah.
Why am What's I my sulking? Deal?
Mm-hmm.
What is my deal? Where do I get off with the nerve to be negative about anything?
Right.
Like, there's nothing, like, I have a good thing going. Like, my life is nice.
Uh-huh.
And that's what should be the focus, not anything else. It's the present, you know, the presence of living in the present.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he is, man. It's, I mean, everything's wonderful all the time, and he's excited to be here. That's it. I mean, how are you not in a good mood when you're around that?
I can't sit here. I can't think of a time I've ever been around BT, and it hasn't just changed my attitude that night.
Right.
That's when you know you're hanging around with somebody that you just should be hanging around as much as possible, mm-hmm. is that no matter what fucked up mood you are, whether you feel is justified or not, or whether it is justified or not, it all doesn't matter when you get around that person.
I know.
I'm around that person. People need to figure out whoever that person is in their life and try to make it, including me and you.
Yeah.
And try to make the connection closer, because obviously the older you get, it's way harder to keep. I mean, listen, me and you have a podcast together. We do shows together. We do content together. We are literally work colleagues. And it's still not easy to keep in touch on a regular basis, like when you're younger, because you got way more shit going on. You got a life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
it just happens.
Yeah. And
I want to get back in the mix, man, and start, you know, offering advice if it's wanted, and just, I don't know, recapture that enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. Just got to get back down in the trenches, you know?
And none of the business part. You get that. You get to get that belly feeling before you go up. because, you know, a lot of people don't realize this. I mean, a lot of people do ask you this. Are you nervous before you go up? And it's not about, it's not nervous. Yeah, at the beginning, it's about nervous and all that because you don't realize what nerves are and what being nervous is. Like, actually, the only thing that really is happening is that there's a ball of energy in your stomach with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And then that's what that nervous, quote unquote, nervousness feeling is. It's nothing more than a ball of energy in the pit of your body, in the middle of your midsection, that is just waiting to go. It has the anticipation of knowing it's about to go. There is something on the line, people looking at you and judging you. And you need to, as soon as you get out there, that energy disperses out of your belly and onto the crowd. So that's what it is. You're not nervous before you public speak. You just have a wild energy inside of you. It creates an energy when you're about to talk to people. When you're going to public speak, inside of your brain and inside of your body, you know, physiologically, I think the word would be, there's a change in you. And there's this anticipation that an energy comes inside of you, like just a different energy. And
you're anxious. Like it's not once you're a pro and you've been doing it long enough, it's not, you're not nervous.
I still get it. You're not nervous.
You get anxious. Like you're especially like when you're open micing a lot, it's like, oh man, I can't wait to get up there and try this new thing. And then, man, I hope it goes well. I hope it's great. Like those kinds of things.
But no matter what, once you get up there, that energy has a place to go. Yeah. It's like sitting, when you're nervous, all it is kind of like when one of those two drag cars get up to the line and they're sitting there like fucking going, right? With all the energy just banging around in a little ball at that car because it's not having nowhere to go. Then boom, now you have the energy pushing you out. And that's basically exactly what comedy or public speaking is.
Yeah.
So you're not nervous. You just don't know what's happening in your body. Once you know that, but you got to go up and talk to people. And like, I know that I still have a feeling inside of my body and it's not nervousness. Like, I'm not nervous. I know I'm going to do well, like knock on wood, but you know, 9 out of 10 times, I know I'm going to fucking have a wonderful night.
I want to get back to that feeling where you can't walk into a room that has a stage and a microphone on it and not want to jump up there immediately and start telling jokes. Like, I want to, you know, because now I get that where, you know, I can go watch a show, no problem. And I'm like, no. Even if somebody's like, hey, you want a guest set? Nah, I'm just going to watch. I want to get back to that. Well, fuck yeah, I want that guest set.
Like, you know? Fuck yeah. I'll go up right now.
Up there. Let's go.
Yeah, my hunger used to be a different level of trying to find sets.
Yeah.
When I lived with Edwin, we would have a contest of how many days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many days in a row can you go up, bro, in L.A.? So it was like a nonstop chase. Like, it was a constant chase of sets.
Yeah.
All we were doing was trying to catch the set. You know, I got lucky because Edwin, you know, he was already on TV, had credits, and he had great relationships, and he ran his own nights. So I was pretty lucky in that manner that if I couldn't, there was always somebody that I had met through working with him in the rooms, all the different rooms we worked at, you know, between him and Felipe, all the people I'd met. So I can always talk and hit up people and be on it. Because this is also, you know, I mean, social media was there, but it was MySpace. It wasn't nothing like it is now.
Right. Now it's,
but again, maybe totally I should do integrated. That, maybe I should fucking do that and just pretend like I'm starting off brand new in New Jersey as a comedian.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want to do. I mean, people know me, obviously, but I don't own a club anymore here. I don't have no power anymore. Right. So I want to be like on an even playing field again, and then just work at the jokes. And, you know, I want to suck sometimes, go up there, try shit that's not working. I want to go through all of it.
Yeah.
I just gotta dive in there.
I'm looking forward to the dive, bro. Maybe we'll start doing some behind the scenes shit of us doing like absolute little baby ass rooms, just random ass shit.
Start filming it, working on shit. All right, brother. Let's get back to it. Anybody that lives anywhere near St. Louis, come see me. ToddComedy.com. There's a link on there for you. Friday and Saturday this week in Helium Comedy Club. It's a great room.
St. Lucas.
All right, brother. Let's do this again here in 2 days. What do you say?
Sounds good to me, buddy.
All right. Love you.
Love you too, buddy.